Okay, and we're on air, and I've got, you know what, I left the chat room open all week, running on my computer, and what I learned is nobody cares in the chat room. No, not one person popped into it and said, hi, Scott. Yeah, hey, where is Cheryl? I saw her walking down the street. Is she done with us?
No,
she comes back.
Have I offended her?
Yeah, I did.
She doesn't like me anymore.
I'm so disappointed.
They got to get it out, but they have the breath.
Sometimes you're too Canadian for me. You know that? I just didn't need to know that.
When I was teaching in the staff room, there was a saying: "Is tell us what you really think. Tell us how you really feel about it."
Well, I hope she still likes me.
She'll have it on here.
She'll listen to it.
Say something on the chat.
Well, I'm worried that she'll leave our group because I don't want it to turn into a boys club. This isn't. Girls are allowed at computer club. Well, but we got one less every week now.
Are you weeding us out?
No.
As a side note, say again.
No, this ends up next week. Will be the last.
You know how I ended up coming to this? How long has this been going on?
Three years ago, I popped in to ask a question about.
I came in to see if anyone had a used laptop.
Well,
it's been a little over 2 weeks.
Then we're really going to miss you.
I was leaving, and they heard him say, let's talk about Windows 8.1.
The end of April. Yeah, the end of April.
I came back and sat down.
I'll be gone.
You're gone.
People here are welcome to meet, but the last few years they've decided to just postpone it until when I receive a return in September.
So there are some. Linda's here from she lives here.
Yeah, I think every season we've left it up to Richard. I have told you a dozen times Tuesday is computer club. Stop calling me. This guy is a good friend, but he forgets that I'm in computer club. He calls me every computer club.
Maybe he does it. Maybe he's got it on auto dial time.
Maybe he's listening. He just wants to shout out. Richard, stop calling.
Open this up.
All right, so we're set. We need to bring ourselves to some kind of semblance of order. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson. We meet at Tequila's every 9:15 to 10:15, every Tuesday, 9:15 to 10:15, here in San Carlos, Sonora. We've got a huge group today. We've got lots of people at our main table, and we've
talking.
Well, we've got like a whole other table going on over there.
So, Ed, let me ask you a question.
All right, how many tables do we have? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tables. That's exactly what I thought. We have a large table of 9 and a table that's a third that size full of people.
And everybody's talking at one time.
Hey, we're coming to order! Anyone interested in computer club? We're coming to order, Mike!
I need a sergeant at arms here.
Slinzio.
That's right, look at that. We got 3 tables over there, we got 9 tables over here. We win. Actually, I've been meaning to bring up, and this is completely aside, I have been meaning to bring up, if we end up being this big of a group, maybe we should really consider having some specific topic groups. Maybe if...
Oh, please.
Seriously.
I like the way you run.
Well, thank you.
I do too.
But it would be interesting if we were to take maybe like half the time and we break into like an iPad group or an Android group. I mean, if we've got this many people, I know you all don't want to listen to everything I have to say.
Yeah, all generalists.
Well, let's consider it. It's out there, okay?
Why not just set the itinerary up that way? Like we have, we talk a lot about TV, put TV for 10 or 15 minutes and iPhones and other, yeah. And just break it down, windows.
All right, you guys are getting way too organized for me.
Okay. Good.
How are we going to end up talking about terrorists if we're busy talking about Android phones?
We're going to have a free for all at the end.
Bob's section?
Yeah, and a section for Bob.
Morning,
he's on
Chester.
Trump this week, so watch out. 1 minute. 1 minute. For Bob.
So, what do I got? I've got few topics, but I say that often. Let me see what we've got going on. Any Netflix issues?
Yes,
Chester. I want to hear. Chester's totally got a topic. I know that.
Several.
Yeah, but
my Netflix is working.
Okay, with a VPN,
yes,
no question. Everybody else is using Netflix. See, it's. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to run into problems in the future or not. It's sure not turning out to be a problem.
I think
I have no Netflix, and Ed says that he doesn't think I have VPN.
Your VPN might be out?
I don't know what's wrong.
Scott, I had an incident yesterday.
With Netflix?
No. Everything really works fine. I went to watch the monologue on the Oscars that came directly from ABC.
Okay.
They said, you're out of the country. I was listening to Pandora on something else.
Across your VPN?
Yeah. And they somehow they knew. ABC knew that I was not in the United States.
So ABC was checking that range of...
Doing their own checking.
Yeah.
They always have. I've had that problem with ABC.
My ass, which always works. Always works.
Until now.
I looked at my VPN, and there's double the American sites now that there was a month ago.
Oh, that's interesting.
But you scroll down and down and down and down. Because Canada's underneath it. So you got to go all the way down. And there's twice as many there now as there was before.
And this is Hide My Ass.
Yes.
Has twice as many American sites to connect to. Which you could speculate that means there's more IP address pools out there. Which makes me wonder if a company like HMA might be looking for every opportunity to grab IP version 4 addresses out there to add to their pools of addresses.
They
because
know what's
of,
going on.
Yeah, because of stuff like ABC and Hulu checking address pools, and possibly Netflix in the future from what we heard from the guys that run Netflix.
I use DNS server, and I haven't had a bit of trouble with Hulu or Netflix. Or
is that the name of the service, DNS
no,
server?
It's called Unotelly. UnoTelly.com. It's real simple to go into your Telmex router and add the DNS. You just pick proxy DNS servers and you type in the numbers they give you, and it's $5 a month, and I haven't had one lick of trouble with Hulu.
What service?
It's called UnoTelly.
How do you spell
it? Is it Uno like the Spanish spelling for one?
UnoTelly.com.
LLY. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. Everything works.
Oh, and you've been using it too, Jim?
That's what I use. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I jump back and forth between the VPN and the DNS redirect. They work fine.
Why do you jump between it, just out of curiosity?
Sometimes, well, for the TV, it's always the DNS redirect. Sometimes on the computers, it picks up that I'm not in the country, and if I just don't want to keep it U.S. site, I'll turn on the U.S. VPN, or I'll put it in Netherlands if I want to do torrents, because it's legal in torrents. As long as you download and don't upload.
There's a lot in there. I was just trying to think of a good example of when the VPN makes more sense and when UnoTelly makes sense.
UnoTelly has both.
So it has DNS redirect, proxy,
and
VPN. So that's your VPN as well.
Right.
So you're not using Hide My Ass or Ytopia or one of these others?
I used Unblock Us in the beginning.
Unblock US? Okay. And so the VPN you're using... Well, the VPN you're using, like you said, you used the example of torrents. Like you physically move the traffic through...
The VPN,
because where your VPN, where your other end of the VPN torrents are legal. There's not a problem.
Any country I want with the VPN, they got five, seven different countries.
I'm suspecting that this will. this will become the norm, is you'll have these two services in one, like you've got with Uno Tele. And maybe we need to do some more investigation in this, because this might be the answer. What I understand about VPN, DNS services, redirecting and proxy services, is that they are tailored for specific sites that you would be going to. So, for example, if you wanted to go to Hulu, you would pick a DNS service provider that recognizes you want to go to Hulu. The VPN would be a more general approach to things. It's like sticking yourself in a particular country and having at it. So it may be a combination of the two services that'll be the ideal solution in the future.
Is a VPN a proxy?
No.
It is not.
No, it's not a proxy. If it's proxying anything, it's proxying where your traffic goes in and comes out. But it's not a server dedicated to proxy. The VPN, what it really does is it encrypts data. And the only places that it can be decrypted is either on your end or the other end of the tunnel, the other end of the VPN connection. And because those are the only two points that decryption can happen, it's virtually a tube that you're sending data through. But that's also why there's so much overhead when you're using a VPN. It can slow your internet speed because you can't access these sites right from your point of origin. You have to access them from the other point on your VPN. And that's where DNS services that redirect would be helpful, because you're able to go right out onto the internet outside of those services that are allotted for it, like Hulu. VPN stand for? What does VPN stand for?
Oh, DNS.
DNS stands for domain name server.
When I'm using Wiktopia, I say bypass DNS, otherwise it's so slow, it's useless.
So maybe what that is that Wiktopia is using their own DNS servers on the other side of the VPN. And so if you're doing... DNS has been blamed for slowdowns in traffic because that amount of time you wait while you look up an address affects your overall experience. Yeah, it's... I've used the analogy that a DNS is like a phone book for the internet, where you go to it with a name and you look up a number, and that's how you make the call. If your phone book was a mile away, it would be really painful to make that call. Even though the call itself wouldn't take much time, you'd still have to travel a mile to get the phone book. So the closer the DNS is and the faster the DNS is, the better experience you have surfing the internet.
How fast can Telmex raise the speed? How high could they go?
Well, it's blowing me away recently. Like, Jim's getting almost 20 megabits a second out of his place.
Wow. And five up, down.
And a couple years ago, that was unheard of, that you could get 20 megabits through twisted pair of copper wires that the phone company provides. It was impossible. There was no way that was going to happen. They... At that time, the common belief was 8 was the max that the phone company was going to be able to offer. In fact, that's what prompted... Well, I know this. I know this in my heart. I don't know this because I've got this information. I can't back it up with documented proof. But I know in my heart the reason they started dishing out fiber optic connections to people is because they were at their limit. They didn't have another technology. And so if they wanted to sell you more bandwidth, they had to physically bring glass into your house. Mm-hmm. So you could take advantage of those higher speeds.
And glass doesn't come into the house, though. It's just telephone wires.
Well, the majority... See, it's cheaper for the phone company to figure out a way not to bring glass into your house, mm-hmm. because your phone wires are already there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Ed came to my house, and we looked at it, and the speed of the... What, the speed of the...
Internet
was really good. But then it was buffering on Netflix and it was buffering on also MAP TV. And so we determined that we needed to turn off the Vonage telephone, because that takes a lot, and we needed to turn off my wife's iPad at the same time, and that really did the job.
Were you using the Vonage at the time you were having buffering problems?
No.
So it shouldn't. The Vonage shouldn't affect you. The Vonage takes up a portion of bandwidth that's equal to, at most, 100 kilobytes a second. Or kilobits a second. 100 kilobits a second.
Well, it worked after I unplugged it.
Yeah. I wonder if there's some other issue going on there. Maybe there's a cable that's bad between the Vonage, or maybe there's something that's causing it to... Maybe it's introducing static into the line for some reason. But the actual bandwidth of Vonage wouldn't cause your buffering. It's more likely some physical problem that includes the Vonage, like the Vonage is damaged, or the cable to the Vonage is damaged, or it's not grounded correctly, and so there's crosstalk in the, and so it's interfering with your ability to get a good connection.
They told me to turn my Skype off. I think that Roku told me to turn my Skype off because it steals a lot of bandwidth.
Well, again, it's, you're looking at bandwidth that's, I mean, unless you're doing high-definition video conferencing at the time of the connection, I wouldn't expect it to cut into your TV viewing. Now, I don't know if I mentioned last week, I think I did, that the difference between 3 megabits to 5 megabits is great compared to 5 to 10 or 10 to 20. When you get above that 5 megabit hump, things like Vonage and Skype, and there's seldom a consideration for these problems with bandwidth, because it's so little. It's such a fraction of 1 megabit. Under 5 megabits, you can feel it if you're doing things like, well, even streaming music, or two people streaming movies at the same time in your house. But above 5 megabits, it's very difficult to feel the impact of that other stuff.
Was the Telmex guy just making me happy? He said that he increased my speed when he put a new modem in, a new Infinitum modem. Is that just a story he told me?
Well, it's possible.
It's possible.
Increasing your speed is two things at this point. It's a contract that allows you to go faster, and equipment that allows you to go faster. And most of the equipment in general that we have around here is connected to standard phone lines, and will allow a connection, I know, up to at least 8 megabits a second, maybe 10 megabits a second, maybe even 15 megabits a second, depending on which generation of the equipment you have. But they've started offering 10 to 20 megabits a second, which definitely need a brand new modem. And I heard it in passing referred to as UDSL, which I'd never heard of before. Everything we've used before you would refer to as ADSL. And I think that UDSL is probably an internal Telmex term for like ultimate DSL, or something they branded themselves. But those routers, I've seen them synchronized at 17 megabits a second. And Jim, I haven't looked at what his is synchronized at, but he keeps getting speed readings at around 20 megabits a second. And so that's what we were talking about before, is those are just unheard of. A couple of years ago, we never thought we could get that out of these phone lines. But Telmex has figured out a way to do it. I can't get it. Jim, I don't know if I told you, I went down to the phone company and asked them about my... You know, I'm only like 3 streets away from you. And I asked them if we could get this higher speed on our block. And they said, no.
You can't ask him. I've talked to Abel.
I mean, the girl at the office has the map, and
okay.
she explained to me why it can't get down to my street.
You're one house up from Primera, right?
Right, but your switch, the fiber optic switch that switches the copper, is on your street, and so it just goes down your street. You have very little distance to go to get to fiber, whereas I have 3 more streets to go than you do to get to the fiber link. And that's what's affecting the speed. It's not the fiber. It's the copper to the switch the fiber reaches. And they're not cutting fiber on my street. Only down at your street did they cut the fiber.
100G?
Yeah. That's the reason you're able to get those great speeds, because you're right at the last mile. The last mile to you is copper, but it's so close to the fiber, you're able to get those great speeds. Right, it goes straight down Primera. It goes one house away from me, but the only way to get that speed is for them to cut into the fiber right there. And
they won't cut into it.
And they won't cut into it.
Why not?
Because there isn't enough customers on my street.
And it's expensive.
They have trouble getting phone lines, too.
They have to...
At Hermosillo, they only allotted San Carlos so many lines for fiber, and they're all used up. So it took me 3 months for them to get me a line after I paid for the telephone pole.
Oh, to get you a phone number.
Yeah. Well, I kept the same phone number, but basically it's a different line, so it's a different phone number from Hermosillo that they tie my number into. And I've got my neighbor next door. They told him he can get it, and they can't get him a good connect from Hermosillo, because that's where it comes from.
Hmm.
And he works for the phone company. He's pissed off. That's where he retired from.
I was one.
Why is it that the glass is not coming directly to the house?
Well, it was. Yeah, I mean, it is. If you hire 100 megabits a second from them, they'll bring fiber optics to your house if it's available in your area. Like, I couldn't, even if I went in there and said, I want 100 megabits a second, here's 1,000 pesos a month, they wouldn't be able to give it to me because there isn't enough customers in my area to warrant cutting the glass there and putting a fiber optic switch in. They basically have to replace their infrastructure there or upgrade it there. And they're not going to do it unless there's enough customers, there's enough demand on it. And it's going to be a while before there's that much demand.
So the fiber optic cable comes to this, does it come to this box that's about 2 feet wide and 3 feet tall that says infinitum? Is that where the fiber optic comes?
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah.
It goes in there?
Mm-hmm. And then it splits off. So they either split off with copper or they split off with fiber to the house. Mm-hmm. Well, since they've been able to upgrade their copper infrastructure with this new equipment, I doubt they'll be bringing more fiber to the house unless you want one of these 100 megabit connections and you're near one of these fiber optic hubs. Because I think what they're going to do is they're just going to say, no, you can't have it. What we have is this available in that area. And what they have available now with the copper is sufficient enough that most people aren't going to be trying to get more than that. And they had to upgrade their speeds because they wanted to offer this Claro video. They wanted to compete with the cable company. Mm-hmm. And so this is the way it's turned out. I thought we were going to end up with fiber optic connections all over town because I thought we were maxed out at around 8 to 10 megabits a second through the traditional technology. And they show up with new technology that maxes out at probably around 20 megabits. But that's more than enough to make most people happy, and they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They just start plugging in new equipment. So there's that. Yeah, Paul.
You ready for another subject?
Sure.
Quick question. My space bar on my keyboard, remote keyboard, that I use for my laptop, I think it's called Dynatex or something like that. It's... doesn't work too well. I have to hit it right in the middle. So is this something?
There's a little spring in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've taken it. I think something got broken there. I don't know.
It may be repaired. The same thing happens with my husband's Lenovo.
You know, keyboards are one of the most frustrating pieces of technology we have. They work great until they don't work.
Yeah.
They get sold at such a cheap price that nobody really fixes them. And all you have to do is spill coffee on it, and you need another one.
Yeah. So where's a good one? Good place to get one? It's in English.
To add a fourth frustration for us, there isn't a good place to get an English keyboard around here.
That's what I thought.
There used to be. When I first got here, that's all they had to sell were English keyboards. It was really easy to get a hold of them. But now they've got Latin American keyboards abundantly everywhere. It's more difficult to find an English keyboard. You could try some mail order stuff. I haven't looked on Amazon.com.mx, but I imagine you can buy an English keyboard there. There's also Dell used to always be good about selling English keyboards. You might be able to get it as an.
I have a recommendation.
What's your recommendation?
Go to Riscati. they're starting new stuff. I mean, they got 10 or 15 keyboards in there.
Oh, that's
yeah, that's a great recommendation.
Okay. At least get you by there. Give
it a yeah, it won't be a remote. Probably won't be a but yeah. It's cord ones. Lots of them.
I have a set of people.
Yeah, yeah, I, one last thing, Paul. Just make sure you're paying attention to the interface because you probably want a USB plug
yes,
on it.
Absolutely.
And if you're looking in thrift stores and things like that, what you're going to find is a lot of PS2 keyboard connectors, which are the round colored ones. Mm-hmm. And just make note. I mean, you might be looking at the keyboard going, this is the right size. It's in English. It looks like it's in good condition. And you get home and see you've got a round connector instead of a USB
connector.
With you.
I don't have to do that.
I have a little good adapter idea. That you can plug that PS2 into and it becomes a USB.
Yeah. It will if the keyboard was built to act as also a USB.
Really?
Yeah. The adapters that you got with those old keyboards were because we were in a transitional stage and they included the USB circuitry and the PS2 circuitry in the same keyboard so that you could add an adapter like that.
May or may not work is what you're saying.
That's right. The keyboard would have had to have been built to support an adapter like that to begin with and then have it missing when you bought it. And to be honest with you, it's difficult to determine which keyboards were built that way. I mean, from the outside, they typically don't have like a model number that says also USB. They don't have a name that says
I
also
the
USB.
I lost kids and the other one. I'll try that.
Yeah, if that was where the route you'd have to go, then you'd almost have to have a computer nearby so that you could test the keyboard to see if it was going to support a USB connection.
I had an old gateway. Mm-hmm. Or a new gateway. My wife had spilled coffee in it. So I don't think it was you, but the battery compartment wouldn't hold the battery in. So the tech put foam rubber in over the top, put it back together, and it worked until somebody spilled a glass of wine in it.
I think I did both of those. I think I did the wine and the coffee.
I think you did too, yeah.
We wrote it off on the second dump,
yes.
I think. Yes,
we sure did.
Yeah. Chester has been waiting patiently to provide us with a topic.
I have a couple of issues. One is I have an older Ruco here. If anybody wants it, I'm not going to throw it away if somebody wants it. I also have the same thing in a Western Digital that has a hard drive in it.
Okay.
And that Western Digital, I never really figured out how to use it, so I replaced it with a Google 3. So if anybody wants them, they're welcome.
Well, I'd be interested in looking at them.
And I have a handheld remote, a brand new one for the Roku One. Only took me, 5 weeks to get it?
Right.
a couple of weeks ago, I had a call from a friend in the U.S., and she said that she had a pop-up blue screen that froze her computer. Gave a phone number to where she could get it repaired and fixed and straightened out. And she had the same thing a couple of weeks before and paid them $375 to fix the computer. Well, I got the same thing. Last week.
You didn't get it from her, did you?
No. Locked me out. There's nothing you could do. And it said, do not unplug your computer. If you do, you will permanently damage it. And here is a phone number to call, and we will get you back in service.
Chester called me. The first thing we did was unplug his computer.
We unplugged it. Yeah. I said, sure.
Let's pull the battery out, too.
Of course, I'm running Windows on an Apple computer, so that may make a difference.
Now, that's a trick.
But and also, I was on a VPN. All of my communications were on the VPN, so we got through that as well.
Well, not that that would, I mean, on a side, that wouldn't offer you too much protection. That really would offer you protection from, say, your neighbor doing it to you. Yeah.
So we unplugged, Scott and I worked this out together. We unplugged all the computers, the hard drives, and I rebooted in Apple and started the Apple up. And then the Apple gave me the opportunity to open the C drive, which is the boot camp, which contains the Windows operating system. And so we went back through that, and it took the computer forever, like 20 minutes to start up. And I fooled around with it, and finally it started working perfectly. So I don't know what to tell you. My recommendation would be, if you get that blue screen, which is a ransom, you know, we've talked about that before.
Pull the plug,
but I was fortunate in that I was backed up on an external hard drive.
And Chester, now that you're saying it like this, I thought you had gone back to a system restore point.
No.
But what had you done on the Macintosh side then?
Well, the Macintosh side wasn't affected.
Well, right, but to repair the Windows side of things.
Well, what I did is I went and, you know, you have the option button, and it'll give you whichever hard drive you want to go to Apple, you want to go to Windows. And so I chose to go to Windows, and it took it about 20 minutes, but it came up. And it's been coming up ever since.
Hmm. Chester, I think you should call that number. Tell me what, 10 grand, or you're going to tell everybody how to fix this.
That's a great idea.
Well, I got nailed with that last summer.
I don't know really what to price again. That's what I did. Yeah. I wasn't about to pay these people because I was back then.
Well, and I think after you got into Windows, the first thing you did was scan the thing with antivirus.
And it didn't find anything. Oh. And I have the AVG Pro.
I think there's something going on because it's a Macintosh running boot camp. I'm wondering if maybe the virus wasn't in the boot sector. Yeah, well, yeah, it was in the boot instructions of the Windows partition, and you did something on the Macintosh side of things to reinforce that sector that ended up wiping it out. Otherwise, I don't think it's gone.
Well, there is another issue that I'm noticing, I've had this for some time. Every now and then, I will get a pop-up screen that's black and about 3 inches by 3 inches, and it's there for less than a second. It's not enough time to even see what it is.
I have the same thing.
You have the same thing.
It's just a flash.
Yeah, just quick.
Just, yeah.
And it doesn't matter which program I'm in or whatever I'm doing, but it's gone, so I haven't been worried about it.
Okay, well, you should be a little concerned about that. It could be very legitimate because there's a lot of software that still behaves in that manner. And what it typically would be, it would be on startup. It would be when you first start up the computer.
Right.
Yours is just showing up
occasionally.
Occasionally. It could also be something that's scheduled to pop up. And it could be the remnants of something. It could be a command that would execute at a DOS prompt, like in a black terminal window, and the command doesn't exist anymore. It's been removed. Like maybe it was something malicious, and your antivirus removed it. And so what's happening is you're watching a box that's trying to run something, failing, and going away. What you might look in is the startup items of your computer to see what's.
I will almost disable everything when I started.
The startup can be got at by the task manager in Windows 10. Actually, Windows 8 as well, I think. If you click on the Windows icon with the right mouse button and choose task manager, there's a tab. Well, you have to get into the advanced. There's a button for advanced. And then there's a tab along the top, and one of them says startup. And if you go to that tab, you'll see a list of everything that's set to start up in the computer when it first turns on.
Well, there's one called services, which is a little different.
That's right, it is.
So
services are essentially, I mean, you can think about them the same way. They talk about services as adding functions to the Windows operating system. A service would be something like Bluetooth. You'd have that service turn on when the computer turns on. And fundamentally, Bluetooth is available to the entire operating system. Whatever thing you might want to Bluetooth is encompassed in that service. But then you might have like a stereo mixer that changes the sound of your speakers, like a very specific kind of application. That would be something that might start in the startup. Right? It's intended for your LG Bluetooth speaker, and it starts up in the startup. The service of Bluetooth starts up in services. if you follow the distinction, it's a vague distinction, but there is a distinction between the two different things. And they cross each other too. They're definitely things that run in your computer like a service would, and they only started because they were in your startup. They weren't actually incorporated in the services list. So they share a lot of the same attributes. But
in connection with the ransom issue, is it possible that Windows 10 fixed itself?
It is. In fact, that long startup, I'm glad you said that, Chester, because I didn't think of that until you just said that. But most definitely, Microsoft is always pushing down a malicious software removal tool. And if it'll come out a secret, it'll come with Patch Tuesday, the second Tuesday every month, but it's also been known to come covertly in the background when nobody's paying attention. And it will install, and when you restart the computer, it will run through a malicious software search. You know what, Chester? That's what did it.
Because it did that a couple of times, like 20 minutes. Started.
Yeah. I bet that's exactly what happened. It's called MSRT, malicious software removal, MRT or MSRT,
that would
removal
be a good reason for going back to 10, if that's the case.
Well, it has existed since 7. Oh. This malicious software removal tool has existed since 7.
MSRT.
Yeah, MRT. Yeah.
Did you just make that up?
No. In fact, I mention it as an acronym because you might want to go back into your Windows update history and just see if it's listed there as recently been added. Because I suspect that's the way you got rid of this.
Scott, I've been ransomed in while I was using Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do Control-Alt-Delete.
Right.
Look at the operations and then start turning off every Chrome application, and then boom, the ransom's gone.
Now, we're not going to be able to find one encompassing solution to this problem.
And also, I've been searching and get an ad window that fogs out the rest of the field,
mm-hmm.
and not be able to get rid of that ad window. And so I did a right click on the screen, and at the bottom it says, examine processes or something like that. Anyway, it gives you a window of code underneath there.
Okay.
And so I looked through the code until I found a routine that had the name of the advertiser.
You're talking about in the task manager view.
Yeah. No, okay. This is not. The other was in the task manager.
Okay.
But this is just
using
at
Chrome.
The code for the screen.
For the screen.
Well, whatever is presented in front of me. No.
All right, are we still talking about Chrome?
No. Well, this was also Chrome.
Okay.
But I think it would work anywhere because if you right-click at the bottom, it says examine something. I'm not sure. But when you click on that, it gives you the code for the screen. And I just found a subroutine that included the name of the thing that was being advertised. I highlighted it, deleted it, and went away.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, and you can do that with the modern browsers now. That's an interesting solution. I never thought about that. Like, you didn't want to leave the page,
no.
But you wanted this advertising element out of your view.
Yeah, because it was blocking.
Now, you have the blue page.
And No. He's talking about a completely different situation. And what you did was you looked at the page source. You inspected it.
That's an inspect.
So. Yeah, and then was able to identify the element, move it. Now, when you remove, you saw the code and you just deleted it. That would remove it in this inspect function that exists in all these new web browsers. You removed that element from your current
function.
Your current view, your current page. You haven't removed that element forever. You've just removed it from that instance that you were using it. Which in this case probably was just fine. It just disappeared. It was like you'd grabbed it and threw it away.
Usually you'll find an X somewhere in the quadrant, but every time I hit the X, it would just reappear.
This is those floating ads that end up going in front of content. They know you want to see the content, so they throw up a screen with an ad in front of it and give you a time limit or an X you have to press. to make the content behind it available.
Why doesn't the pop-up blocker stop those?
Some of them do. In fact, I was going to mention this. All right, why do I have sticky stuff on my keyboard? Damn it. It is like syrup. I'm not a slob. Well, okay, I might be a little.
So you're going to Biscotti too.
I'm sure I was eating in front of my my keyboard. Yes. And I have children. So any one of those things could explain a sticky keyboard. Well, yeah, and let me bring. I'm waiting for my web browser to open here because I've been using a utility to block things that I think is awesome. I've been using it for a while now. Did I install it on this computer? I'm sure I did. I just can't remember the name of it at the moment, so I'm trying to remember it. Should be coming up in front of me right now. Is this it? Come on. My poor little netbook. It works so hard.
While you're waiting, can you suss?
Okay, well, I got it. uBlock Origin. uBlock Origin has been, I have been using for about now.
Is it Y-O-U or just U?
No, it's actually the letter U and the word block, and they actually make the B a capital letter. So it's U, capital B, block. And then the next word is origin with a capital O. And it's a plug-in that you call in your browser. And I like it because it basically blocks. It's an off and on switch for blocking stuff. And you basically turn it on, and it blocks JavaScript, it blocks advertising, it blocks known. And what I've enjoyed about it is it's really sped up web browsing because it's blocking these JavaScripts that are typically being used for sharing.
Would you go back over that again so I can
find out? uBlock is the name of it, uBlock Origin.
Okay, it's like AdBlock Plus?
It's similar but less complicated.
In which browsers does it work with?
Works with all of them except for Edge. Actually, I don't know if they've got an Internet Explorer. Now I say that. I don't know if there's an Internet Explorer. But it works with Chrome. It works with Firefox. Let me say that. Works with Pro Chrome. Works with Firefox. uBlock Origin. And what I like about it is it's like one big power button. You just turn it on, turn it off. And I have forgotten that I have it running 90% of the time.
Where do you turn it on and off? Is it up
on the toolbar of your web browser after it's installed? Now, what you have to be aware of, though, is that if something looks odd, it might be because of the uBlock Origin. That's gotten me confused at times because I've got a message on the screen saying, click here to do such and such, and I click there and nothing happens. I'm like, wait a second. And I click and I click and I refresh and I click and I click and finally I realize, oh, it's uBlock. It's stopping me. So I reach up into the bar, I turn it off, everything works.
So can I ask a question? You know, a couple of weeks ago you said that we should not be running Java, so I took it off.
Yep.
But I can't get onto one of my banking sites.
Because you don't have Java?
Yeah.
Are you certain?
I'm certain.
You need a new bank.
No.
Yes, you do.
No,
you
Bank
need
America.
A new bank. No,
it's
you
Bank
need
America.
Well, you need a new bank for that.
I can use
for sure you need
Chrome that. Works with no Java, but Firefox does not. So I have to switch browsers to go onto that site.
I would say that's more secure than installing Java in your computer. Okay. I'd also say that if that's the case, it's not Java, it's Flash that won't work.
Well, yeah, that's true. It's Flash.
It's Flash. Yeah.
So how do I put Flash back on?
Oh, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'd use Chrome.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a more secure solution.
But I go on there and all of a sudden I go, what is the matter? And it takes me a couple of times to realize that the problem is.
That is what I'm saying. I'm saying that Flash, Adobe Flash, and Java have both been major security problems. And they're very robust platforms, which is a plus and a minus. It means that we were able to do a lot of complicated stuff real fast and easy, and we could distribute it to many computers without a lot of hassle back in the day. We've got other options now. Because it's so robust, it's become a real security problem because it can do things like access files on your computer from your web browser. Because it's become such a major security threat, the recommendation most tech people have for most people in general is get rid of it. You don't need Flash and you don't need Java anymore.
I have to use it for Alliant Credit Union, so I download it, download what I need from the credit union, and then take it off again.
Now, I think you're referring to Adobe Reader, PDFs, and you're not wrong for grouping that into it as well, because Adobe Reader has a slew, a whole history of being compromised by viruses.
Yeah, you're right.
And why does it work on Chrome and not on Firefox?
Well, this is the reason that Chrome is a more secure solution for you, is because it's always the onus has always been up to you. It's your own fault if you end up infected with a virus that came through Flash, or came through Java, or came through Adobe Reader. What Google did with the Chrome browser is they integrated Flash and Chrome, Flash and Reader into the Chrome browser. That's very significant. That means that Google is taking that responsibility away from you. It's saying that of those Chrome updates you get in one about a week, I think we're up to like version 44 right now of Chrome. Chrome updates itself in the background without bothering you. It typically, when it switches from version to version, it just needs to turn off and turn back on, and now you're with the new version of Chrome. Part of all that includes giving you the latest version of Flash. And sometimes Chrome is getting updated just because there's a new version of Flash out there. Because you have Chrome, because it's self-maintaining, you don't have to maintain it. You're not responsible for making sure you have the latest version of Flash.
So we can just go into the uninstall and get rid of Flash and...
And you'll be more secure because...
What's the other one? Flash?
What, Java's the other one.
And
now, Java has not been reproduced by anyone. And so my advice with Java is uninstall it. You'll very quickly learn whether you need it or not through your regular activities. If it's something that you're regularly doing, within a week you're going to start getting messages saying you need Java installed. At that moment, you should have a soul-searching experience of what you're doing. Is it? And that's why I say get rid of your bank. If you're dealing with a bank that insists on you having Java installed in the web browser, they're insisting that you take extra security risks, which is counterintuitive for a banking institute. Mm-hmm. All the banks I'm familiar with have stepped away from Java and have stepped away from Flash. I would imagine your experience, they've got some goofy interface that just looks pretty. It has nothing to do with security, but
actually, they have a program called ShopSafe. And in order to create a ShopSafe number, it's linked to your card number, but it's not your number. It's linked, and it's called ShopSafe. And to do that, you have... With Firefox.
It's a Flash app.
But with Chrome, I can do it.
It's still a Flash app, but you're doing it with Chrome.
Safer.
I got rid of Java and my banking records.
So that's the soul searching experience I'm talking about, is that that's stupid.
That's important.
It is that ShopSafe.
Me.
Yeah, but the fact that they would base something that would be a financial transaction...
Right.
on such a well-documented security risk is stupid for a bank to do. And it should be one of those things that make you decide whether you want to be banking with them or not.
They'd be disappointed they broke into
a little different question.
They're all broke anyway.
PDF file. It used to open them with Reader, but once I installed 10, there's something in there that's different format.
That's right. Microsoft
is part of 10 or part of Chrome?
It's part of 10 and it's part of Chrome. There's a PDF reader in Chrome for exactly the same reasons we're talking about. There's a PDF reader built into Windows 10 for exactly the same reasons we're talking about.
So I don't need your reader anymore.
That's right. Nowadays you would install Adobe Reader because you have features in Reader that you're familiar with and you feel comfortable using. But I don't think it's worth the security risk. I like that Google has taken responsibility for this stuff. I like that Microsoft has taken responsibility for this stuff so that you no longer have to worry about this. But don't misunderstand. I think this thing your bank's doing is stupid. And the reason I think that is because even though Google's taken responsibility for it, your computer gets infected with something. It's your bank account that's affected. It's your computer that's affected. Even though it's Google that's making sure it's up to date, you're the one that's going to have to suffer from the consequences of that. And that's why your bank should not be doing anything like that.
So it should get rid of Reader as well.
There's no need for it.
Okay.
And there's the same security threat, is that it's been compromised a number of times.
If I download something that's a PDF and I'm looking at it just from my desktop browser, how can I read it if the only source is in Chrome and I'm not using the browser, I'm just looking at it?
Well, and Paul, that's what we're talking about. It's included. There's a reader program included in Windows 8 and in Windows 10.
Okay.
There isn't a reader included in Windows 7.
Oh, okay.
So, if you're running Windows 7, then you're going to need a PDF reader. And you might consider using some other PDF reader, like Foxit Reader.
Oh, I didn't know
those. And most people aren't aware there are some options there. And still, I would encourage you not to install a PDF reader, but to use Chrome as your desktop PDF reader. Because when you use Chrome, at the very least, Google has made sure it's got the latest version available. Soon as Adobe makes those versions available, Google's integrating that into the operating system. And Windows 8 and 10 are doing the same thing. And I keep saying 8 and 10. There is a dividing line. It may only be up to date in 10. There's a little disclaimer. I may be overreaching with the 8, but the 10 definitely. The PDF reader is updated with security fixes every time Adobe puts out security fixes. Flash is updated with the security fixes every time. And you're not looking at a web browser going, this is out of date, you should update it, which is now the standard form. And that's what's considered the security now, is that the web browsers took it on themselves to identify when your Flash or Adobe Reader is out of date and tell you, so that then you can go to Adobe and download the latest version. I still think it's too much. I'd rather have it updated as secure as possible, happening in the background without you having to think about it.
Windows 7 is what most of us have still here.
I don't think so.
No?
Yeah.
I have 10.
10.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, I think we got mostly 10 people.
We did a show of hands not so long ago.
Yeah, and I think the majority were 10.
Okay, what's the reader if you have Windows 7?
Well, you're going to have to find one. And
you mentioned one name.
Well, Foxit is one of the readers that I've used in the past. I really liked it.
Okay.
I think I would do some reviews before I picked a new one. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I would shy away from the Adobe product is because it's the one that's notoriously compromised.
Scott, does OpenOffice.org have a reader, reader?
Thank you, Linda. I couldn't answer that. Go ahead.
Yes, it does. Okay. Yeah, and you can create PDFs right in the OpenOffice.
That would be a good thing to install in lieu of.
Yeah.
You would have the same issue of making sure that it was up to date regularly. Because
they don't have that many upgrades.
Yeah. The threats from a PDF reader are a little different depending on which ones you're using. The Adobe one, the classic one, is they're able to run programs on your computer. They're able to run scripting on your computer. Some of the PDF readers won't allow you to do that, but the Adobe version does. So you can have an Adobe document, a PDF document, that actually would launch programs on your computer through Visual Basic scripting or Java scripting. And so it would just be a matter of making sure that OpenOffice is up to date. Yeah, to make sure you weren't dealing with a PDF threat.
Have you ever used LibreOffice?
Oh, yeah, that's the one I choose, actually.
That's the one I like. I like the presentation, so when you go into a file and you're looking for a document, they've actually have the document for you to look at.
Right.
They're just smaller versions.
Yeah, they give you a little preview of each one of the documents you're looking at. No, I run LibreOffice on all my platforms. Yeah. I've got it on my Macintosh. I've got it all on my Windows. If ever I was thinking about OpenOffice, I would prefer LibreOffice. Yeah, they just have a better reputation. Wait, actually, you know what's interesting about this whole thing is it's an open source project, so you don't pay anything for this software. It's maintained by Oracle now, the OpenOffice project. And they had a falling out, the community and Oracle, when Oracle took stewardship of the project. And so there was this moving of the minds, that the people that really built OpenOffice just rejected Oracle completely and grabbed their code base and moved off onto their own project called LibreOffice. And from that point on, OpenOffice has continued to exist and get updated, whereas LibreOffice has been updated consistently. It's maintained compatibility with whatever changes OpenOffice has chosen to do, but has really been the one that feels like you're using Microsoft Office. It's been the first one to be compatible with Office documents. Before OpenOffice has, LibreOffice has. And so that's why it ends up being the choice of so many people.
How do you spell that, Scott?
I like the Spanish, L-I-B-R-E, Office, Libre.
When you do envelopes, it actually shows, the envelope shows everything.
Yeah. Libre is significant in the open source community for that specific translation. It means free like freedom, not free like gratis, but not like beer.
In this regard, if you're using Libre and you're sending files back and forth to other people, if they don't have Libre, can they open?
Yes.
Well, yes and no. I guess a better question, because it's an open document format. So there's actually a lot of programs out there that open the open document format. So the real question that you're asking, Chester, which is valid, is can somebody that's running Microsoft Office open these documents? And they can, but you might have to save it as an Office document. You might have to, when you go to save your document for them, you may have to save it as an Office 97 or an Office 2003 or an Office 2013.
That speaks for using Microsoft Office.
Well,
you communicate a lot of this information.
You could, but Chester, at the same time, again, LibreOffice is free. And the latest version of LibreOffice opens all versions of Microsoft Office. Whereas if the person you're exchanging with is using Office 2007,
yeah,
they can't open the newest
point.
Office documents, if you follow what I mean.
Yep,
so if you were in a position where you had to open an Office 2016 document and you don't want to buy Microsoft Office, then you can download LibreOffice to do it.
Oh, really?
It'd be nice to have a class sometime in the database and the rest of it, because it has draw. It has, what, 6 or 8 functions to it? So there's lots of firepower there.
Yeah, no, they have
database, spreadsheets, drawings, documents, presentations, a lot of stuff.
And outside of the word processor, I use the spreadsheets and the word processor all the time. That's my Office suite. But I did make the mistake at one point of making a database that needed to grow, and I started it in LibreOffice's database program, and very quickly grew out of it. Very, very quickly, it was not going to work for my solution, and so I had to go and redo work in Microsoft Access. That because of the need to be compatible with Access, because of the world we live in, their database package hasn't reached that scope yet where it can be used like that. Ironically, other open source products have, and I do a lot of work with MySQL, which is a web-based database, and that's used all over the place. And so I can bypass needing Access compatibility just by going to MySQL and building my database there.
Scott,
Yeah.
I was going to give you an update on a topic I brought up last week. Was one day my emails, I couldn't send emails anymore, and so you said it come up and said the message was an IP issue. So you said get a hold of your provider, which I did, and I talked to them. They checked, and they said that the Telmex here, the server, had shut down everybody that was on that IP. And so then they walked me through a process to be able to tell them that I'm not the bad guy, right? They said there was too much spam being sent on that IP.
Okay.
So they closed the whole thing down. Anyways, you walk it through and you put in all your information, and then about a day later, all of a sudden, it starts working again. But not only did mine start working again, but everybody in the building that I'm in started working again. Hmm. So I don't know if anybody's ran into that.
But it sounds like what your mail, the problem last week that you were sharing with us is that you weren't able to
send email. I could receive all my email from my provider,
right?
But I couldn't send out any email. Just stop all of a sudden. No notice, no nothing. Just stop.
Okay. And so they walked you through how to set up your sending settings.
Well, they told me that it was the server here.
Sure.
When you receive, it's their server. When you're sending, it's the server here.
No.
Well, that's what they told me.
But what happens is, like, Telmex blocks ports for sending.
Yeah.
And so you can't, and that's what I was saying last week, is that they probably upped their security on their end so that the port that you are sending on isn't the one that they receive anymore. I think that's what we were talking about.
I'm not sure.
Does that sound right?
There was too much spam being sent on that IP, so then they closed down the whole IP until you go in and tell them, hey, look at me, I'm not the bad guy, so let me through.
So did you do that by providing a username and password
on your
sending connection?
And all the information
So that's what's going on, is that they had you make a secure connection from this end to their end so that you could use their server to send from. Linda, you mentioned last week at the end of club that there are new settings for the IPTV setup. You told me there was some...
Oh, yeah.
And you wanted to mention that.
Well, if you do have IPTV now, they're requiring a username and a password in order to have it because of, obviously, security issues. So now when you turn on your TV for the first time, when you go in and pay for your IPTV, they give you a donation number. You need to save that donation number. Because when you go to turn your TV on, you have to put in the username and the password, and both of them is your donation number. So too many people pay for things and don't print the paper that comes back with all the information on it.
I get what you're getting at.
And in order for you to get that information again, it's almost impossible since this is illegal.
Wait, it's questionable.
The payments are coming either from China or from Panama. So it's really important when they give you your payment information that you print it and save it. Too many people are trying to go paperless, and you still really can't go paperless. You really still need to have files and things to keep important papers. And not try to rely on putting them in your phone, or because if you lose your phone, you've lost everything.
Yeah.
It's too easy to lose. For instance, I keep losing my emails on Gmail. Big blocks of them.
Really?
So yesterday, now this must be something new in 10, because yesterday Google made me change my password. And a notice came up, too, to change my password.
Okay.
So I bought a new password, I changed my password. Well, now, every single device you have...
needs a new password.
Plus, they have instituted this two-step verification.
Yep.
So every single device, you have to get the phone call and get the code and put the code in.
Oh,
In
but my problem now is I have Firefox, Mozilla Thunderbird as my client, and now we can't get our email anymore. I put the new password in. It won't take the password on either my computer or his computer. And I don't know how to fix it.
For the email settings.
For the email settings, and I went into the help.
Yeah. And this is for the Gmail.
This is for the Gmail.
On Thunderbird.
Correct.
Using a Thunderbird. Thunderbird is an email client. We've gotten away from using email clients. Some people might still be using email clients. And if you're using Windows 10, you might have tried out the new mail client in Windows 10. If you've got an Android phone or an Apple phone, you're using an email client there. But we've reached a point where the majority of us think of email as being Hotmail at a web page or Gmail at a web page. So Thunderbird is an email client, which is a piece of software that sits in your device, and its whole job is for managing email, and it's got to talk to the email server to fill it up with email. And you're not able to talk to the email server anymore.
Nope.
It won't accept the password.
Nope. And I've gone into the help to find out what to do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in there.
No, I don't have. I'll bring it up to
you. I've checked. I've huh?
Trying to play it out. Sorry.
Well, I guess we're going to have to get rid of it. But we keep losing blocks of emails.
Like you can't find them. If you go to the web page in Gmail, you can't find these emails.
They're
you can't
gone. Like the other day, the last, a whole block from the 26th on.
So my experience with those kinds of complaints from people with their email,
yeah.
I normally find somewhere in their life they have a device that's configured for POP access. That's deleting email after a time, and it's wiping it off of the server. And all it has to be is a phone or a tablet or something that's not turned on regularly, but occasionally gets turned on. And it's been configured to delete old emails. And the standard one you see is like 30 days. Delete all email that's older than 30 days.
Right.
And so it leaves the last month, but it takes out all this other email that was there.
Right.
The other one is to delete it whenever it's in the trash of the device.
Right.
And that's hit or miss because some devices are not good about deleting them on the server when you delete them from the trash. Others are really good at doing it. But Linda, I'd look for some device that you have, and I would basically, here's what I would do. Every device you have, I'd go and double check your email settings and look at the POP settings and make sure that you don't have it set to delete your email.
That's what mine would do too.
I had a terrible experience one time with my Macintosh where I was setting up my Hotmail account in it, and I didn't know that it defaulted to deleting email, and before I knew it, a few thousand emails were sitting in my computer and nowhere else. They were completely gone from the server. And some people be like, well, that's great, now the server's clean and you know, privacy issues and all. And I'm like, no, that's not how I operate. I want all those emails out there. That's my backup. I don't care if the FBI can see my Hotmail. I want to be able to see my Hotmail from any computer I touch.
These aren't all the emails. They're like blocks. They'll be like 10 days,
right?
2 weeks.
Well, see, that's where maybe when they hit the trash can, they're being deleted. So, like, you've got some device that's set up to delete your email.
From the Mozilla Thunderbird?
Could be your phone.
It could be. It could be your phone. It could be anything that runs an email client could be doing that. And so you just want to go through your devices that you use and check their settings. Because what you're describing sounds like you're browsing on maybe a tablet, tossing things in the trash, but on that particular tablet, when it goes to the trash and gets deleted there, it pulls it off the server, too.
So that's from the Gmail app on Android?
Oh, it might be. I mean, if you can set the app like that, yeah. No, in fact, if you are using the Gmail app,
yeah.
I would expect when you put it in the trash, of course it's off the server because it's working intimately with the Gmail server.
Well, on that same kind of a question, why, when I have rules set up, they don't work on my iPad? I have to go into each particular mailbox and download those individually.
Where are the rules set up?
On my MacBook.
So that's where you should expect the rules to work.
And nowhere else.
And nowhere else.
Okay.
Because that's an email client, and that's one of the advantages of using an email client. But it's isolated to that client installation.
And there's no way to have it move over to my iPad.
Honestly, I've got an iPhone. I've never spent any time looking for rules. There might be rules.
I haven't found them.
Yeah, but...
So that makes sense, because when my computer was turned off, my laptop was turned off.
Yeah.
All the emails came into my inbox on my phone while I was traveling.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, so
yeah, and in fact, that's the way you can do it, is you can just have your, like, I have a computer sitting at home mm-hmm. on with the inbox on
right,
all
too.
The time. So that's doing all the organization. That's what's,
right.
And so then when you get to the email on your phone or your tablet, all that's already happened in the background. So
but
all
you
get
see
is,
it.
Right.
I mean, you don't see that you have 10 messages in my son's file. You know, you don't see that until you actually download that individual mailbox.
Right. Right. The and that you have control over in the mail client. Like, say you're using an email that
Gmail.
Like Gmail can be set up as an iMappy account. I think that's the default now on the Macintosh. So when you use your Mac email client to filter messages mm-hmm. into certain folders, as long as the folders exist on Gmail, mm-hmm. then if the folders exist on your Mac, you're not going to see them on your tablet.
So I need to make those folders in gmail.com.
Well, yeah, but you can still do that from the Macintosh. You put those folders under the Gmail where it says
right,
all
right.
mail and it has a send.
That's where they are.
Yeah, yeah, so if they're there, then your rules are sticking them there. That's synchronizing with gmail.com. And then when you go to it with your tablet as a iMappy, those folders are available as well.
They're available, but they don't show until you actually try and download.
Like a refresh or something. And that's just for convenience.
Oh.
That's so your tablet isn't taking up a lot of bandwidth and you're not full of stuff that you don't need. Because with a connection, and I'm sure you can set that. I haven't looked into that either, but I've seen a number of mail clients where you can control those folders. You can say these folders should sync all the time. Right, so maybe you've got a folder that stuff's getting added to all the time, and you need to be carrying that around in your tablet.
Right.
Then I wouldn't be surprised to find a setting that allows you to check that folder as something that syncs with the inbox.
Okay.
So this is data usage, sync Gmail. So that should be checked. But then next it says days of mail to sync, 4 days.
Right.
So should that be changed?
Well, that would mean that what it's keeping up to date with is only 4 days old. And it's doing that to make, not to exceed the capacity of your phone.
Right.
To not exceed your bandwidth capacities with your metered connection. So all that sounds okay to me. What you're looking for is settings about deleting messages. I suspect, though, if you're deleting messages on your phone using the Gmail app, they most definitely would be deleted on gmail.com.
They do on AOL.
Yeah.
So any mail that I get when I'm in my server, or I go ahead and put it in save mail. Maybe there's 10 or 20 items.
Mm-hmm.
I erase everything else and do the same on my phone, but I have it. They're still in my files, so I don't lose it. Because if I'm traveling, I have 60 messages on my phone, emails, crap I don't want. If I try to erase them, it erases everything on the computer. So I take from the computer, put it in my files, then I can get rid of everything.
Oh, so you maintain a hard copy on your computer.
Absolutely.
That's the only place it exists.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about this now for a little while. The email issue, what we've been talking about is technically how email works. We haven't talked about the security of email under these circumstances. And we have legislation now that any given state can have its own specific rules about what is private and what is searchable. And you could find that, like what I said about my thousands of emails out there in Hotmail, could very well be available to law enforcement without a warrant as part of their typical searching stuff, just because it's been sitting out there 30 days, or it's been sitting out there 60 days, or sitting out there 90 days.
Five years.
Yeah, it's...
Forever.
Well, there, I've seen, and it's state by state, but each one has a different precedence. And some of them are 30 days. If you've let it sit out there for 30 days, it's kind of like... I almost had the terminology. It has something to do with storage in public places. And it's almost the same kind of laws about trash. Like when you take your trash out to the curb and you're not storing it on your personal property, you're storing it on some service, it no longer has the same security as it did in your personal property. So it doesn't need the same kind of mechanisms to make it legal to search. So, and that's a consideration when you're thinking about leaving mail on servers. It's a whole another aspect of this that we haven't really talked about.
Scott, do you have an update on the Apple situation with the court case?
With the court case.
What's the court case?
Well, you know,
it's in the third
hour. Okay, here's an interesting twist that I became aware of this morning. I was listening to a security expert that I really respect named Steve Gibson. He has his own podcast. He's well known in the industry. He is one of the supreme intellects when it comes to security. And this is a real twist for me. It turns out that since iOS 8, the operating system that's in our iPads and iPhones and iPods have been custom to the device using an encryption key specific to the device's hardware. Essentially what that means is that when you download a operating system update, like we just did this update to Windows 10, right? When you download an update, you go from 8 to 8.2 or 9 to 9.1 to 9.2. The copy that comes down to your device was tailored for your device. At its very essence, because of this encryption issue, your device tells Apple what kind of encryption to use to put the operating system in your device. I couldn't take the software from your device and stick it on my device because we have two separate identifiers. It's actually amazingly secure. What Apple has come up with.
Each phone is unique, like in terms of...
Absolutely unique. And I trust this guy. I know he knows what he's talking about. And that deflates this argument from Apple. And it leaves us in a perplexing position for how we feel about this. Because what that means is that Apple can create
that one phone.
Just that one phone.
Wow.
And open it up. And it goes back to Apple is annoyed that the FBI has decided to do this in public, because they would have done it for the FBI in private. But because the FBI did it in public, it's obvious that they want a precedent set. They want it known that Apple can do this, and they want the government to force Apple to do this, and that's the reason Apple is taking such a strong stance. If they had gone through back channels like they've done in the past, it's pretty obvious Apple would have opened the phone for them. So I'm not sure how I'm feeling on this. Yes?
Yesterday, the lower court upheld Apple.
Yes, I saw
that. Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
that's what I heard too, but I wasn't sure.
Different court. No, last year, Linda asked a question that we had the answers for. How can I find my computer on Windows 10? So a few days ago, I went in to find my computer. It doesn't exist anymore. It's called My Files now. So there's no more My Computer, according to this.
Yes, it is. It's called This PC.
Yes.
This PC.
Yeah.
PC. But they renamed it instead of saying it's My Computer.
But
so I'm
right. It says This PC now.
Yeah.
Before we leave this Apple discussion, though, I just wanted to reiterate what this means is Apple can open just this particular phone without handing a key to the FBI to open whatever phone they want. That I mean, just wanted to make sure that was clear when
well,
we were finished.
Once they have the code, then can't they just open the phones?
They can't open any phone. They can only open that phone.
So once they get the permission to open that phone, then they'll be looking for the permission to open
right,
that phone.
And that's what Apple doesn't want. Is they don't want the government to come to them with a box of 100. Apparently, there's like 170 phones that are waiting to be opened. And they don't want to have to do this for each and every phone. They don't want to set a precedence where they're the ones that are opening it. But in reality, they don't want to set a precedence where they're being forced to. They want the FBI to come to them quietly through back channels.
Say please.
And they will open it for them.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't do that.
And because they've made it so public is the reason that they're in this battle right now. There's another thing I just wanted, I learned about this morning. I just wanted to share with you guys, going back to the ransomware, there's been a hospital, I didn't catch the name. They went 10 days, their whole administrative shutdown. They say they were literally back to pieces of paper and fax machines because of ransomware. They finally decided, I hope their IT staff got fired, because they should never have been in a position where they didn't have backups to bring everything back. This is a hospital, right? So they ended up paying the ransom. The ransom was 40 bitcoins. 40 bitcoins translates to $17,000. And they decided that was the cheapest, easiest way to get the hospital back up and running again.
Except they can come back next week and
do the same.
Well, if these people had that kind of reputation, people would never pay them. Now, that's what it comes down to.
There's got to be a way to catch them.
Well, and as soon as the infection is known, it's repaired. Like, your antivirus is updated. Now you can't get infected with that. The reason that it's always such a big deal is the payload. It's this data on your system or on a network of systems is unretrievable without that encryption key, because math is perfect, people are not, and if you don't have that key, it's garbage. That key is quintessential to reading what that garbage means, and if you don't get that key, it's gone. All that information is gone. And there are levels to this ransomware. Fortunately, there isn't a lot of ransomware encrypting things. But that's what you could have faced, Chester, is it could have started encrypting all your hard drives. That's why we unplugged them. And this hospital, they could not retrieve their data. And it had gotten all the way into their backups because of the way they were doing things.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, so how's that for a happy note to end our club on? We'll see you next week. Thanks for coming. Yes, sir.
I have a full week.
Okay.
A quick question.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
I keep reading it's bad, so I did not read it.
Okay, I haven't heard anything about it being bad.
Well, I was just checking because I put in Quicken 2007 work on El Capitan.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah,
and
I don't know.
Quicken says yes, no problem.
Oh, good.
But then you go in and you look at El Capitan and the comments on it. It's horrible. Have you upgraded?
I haven't upgraded. But
that was my question.
But it's not because it's horrible. I haven't upgraded out of convenience. My computer runs 24/7. It has 1,000 jobs it's doing, and I need to shut it down, stop everything I'm doing, make sure everything's backed up.
So I'll just wait until you do it, and then I'll go.
Yeah, the other thing is the way Apple does things, you're compatible with everything that's happening.
Yes, and it's fine.
Back three generations.
The only thing that says is better is photos.
You really, at this point, you're adding features.
Yeah.
So does that matter?
Probably not.
Maybe later.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What I've run into, this is AT&T.
Okay.
It's supposed to be for Canada, U.S., and Mexico.
Okay.
Now, I understood I should be able to just dial. That's here. And here's what I get.
Mobile network not available. Okay, so that would mean you're not connected. Let me take a look here.
My Wi-Fi is on.
Right, but you wouldn't be going through Wi-Fi. It's the cell network that's unavailable. If you were using, for example, Skype, then Skype would go through the mobile.
Right,
through
no, I'm not
Wi-Fi.
Using Skype. I'm just phone in. So
if we go into your settings, let's just see what's going on with your mobile settings here. Oh, you're in airplane mode.
You're in
airplane mode.
Well, that would do it right there.
Yeah, you're in airplane mode with Wi-Fi turned on, and you can see that from this pull down. You don't have to go into settings like I did. So if you pull down here, these are your notifications.
Yep.
You pull down farther, these are options.
Yep.
And right here it says no SIM card. No SIM card.
Well, there is. There's an AT&T SIM card in there.
And I'm hitting the wrong thing anyway. It's the airplane we should be looking at. Airplane mode. Let's turn it off airplane mode. There. Now it says no service.
And it does pick up, for the internet, it does pick up the internet here.
Well,
I told my wife when she bought that cheapo phone that she was going to have lots of problems, but
you probably don't want data roaming on.
No.
It's
$104 a month. All she needs is actual basics.
Well, the other issue here is if it can find a cell carrier that matches up with the radios, which shouldn't, you'd think wouldn't be that big of a deal. But
we don't have to dial the 044. You only need that when you're getting going into another cell phone.
That's right.
That's my home phone number on there that I'm trying to get through to. That I was over. We were doing.
Well, after
I
got settled in my room, I called him in. I could tell him that
I was in an emergency. We did the spay and neuter clinic over in Guaymas last week, and I went phone back home to talk to the wife, and that's what I kept getting. So I got home here, and I couldn't figure it out. So what the hell was it?
Well, okay. So out of airplane mode. Your phone is ready to connect to a Wi-Fi network, but it's not. I mean, not a Wi-Fi, I'm sorry, a mobile network, to a cell network.
So there may not be a cell network that's available in this area.
That supports your phone. Well, oh, wait, did I just get it?
It should be because it's...
Yep,
it,
Telcel. It finally joined Telcel.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, now your dialing should work.
Okay. Thank you very much, Scott.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I don't know. She's having... Well, of course, you know, she has problems with every piece of...
And hey, I'm still recording, so be nice. Let me sign off here. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday at Tequila's from 9:15 to 10:15 and discuss the world's tech topics and how they affect us retired and living here in Mexico. You are welcome to join us any Tuesday. You can come to Tequila's. People do it. They come here for breakfast first. They stick around for the meeting. Or you can join us online. Go to sccclub.org and you can listen to us in real time. I got a chat room there. Nobody's ever in it. But if you felt like you wanted to pose a question, that's the place you could do it, and we would deal with it during club meetings. If you've got computer problems, I'd appreciate it if you call me. I'm Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. I own one of the computer shops here in San Carlos, Mexico. I do services for San Carlos, Guaymas, and Empalme. And if you have any computer needs, call our office at 226-0209 or get us through the website at internationalcs.net. I guess that's it. I'm going to sign off. Everybody, tech on, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.